Hi, Jan.
Oh,
Hi, you
hello. There
guys.
you
Wait,
go.
let me
I
see if I
wasn't
can.
hearing you, but I'm hearing you now.
Nice. Hi, Deborah. Yay. So nice to see you. Let
Woo-hoo. This is
me
kind
close my door. Huh?
fun seeing all these beautiful things in
I have a plant that's like growing wild back here. It's taking over my house.
my God.
Look at
What a
that.
happy plant.
It's
I love
growing up the ceiling. It's growing up the wall. Yeah, it's just in a pot right there.
That's a message.
Huh?
That's a message. What can go
Yeah.
inside your
What's that?
pot? Hi, person.
So,
I'm Deborah.
Deborah, this is Jan.
Hi, Jan.
Hi, Deborah. Nice to meet
Nice
you.
to meet you too. Nice to meet you too.
Jan is a wonderful practitioner, healer, a helper to me in so many ways,
Oh.
and just really taken to this work in just an amazing way. And a yoga teacher and a mother and grandmother extraordinaire, as you are.
That's
So,
fun. That's fun.
yeah.
You live in Austin?
I don't. I actually live in central Utah. I live in the
Wow.
mountains.
Yeah, the people are going to be from all over the place that are on the call tonight. Do
Yeah.
you need anything like a screen share or a PowerPoint or anything like that? Okay. All
I'm just
right. We'll talk. Sounds good to me.
up to my eyeballs in abnormal psych, so we're good.
All right. Jan, will you be kind of tracking attendance tonight?
Yes, absolutely. That's what I was just doing, is pulling up
Oh,
the
excellent. Thank you so much.
spreadsheet. And I do have to leave a little bit early, so I'll just slide right out and
Okay.
say goodbye in the chat. But just so you
Okay.
know, and Deborah as well.
Thanks, Jan.
Yeah.
I have to sign off right at 5:15, so we'll maybe say that at the beginning to promote.
No
Okay,
problem.
that's great. Yeah.
And Deborah, if there's any info, like if you want to put your contact information in the chat, you could do that. That might be nice for people. So that they have your website and your contact information in case they have questions or want to check in with you about anything. And I'll do a little introduction of you, and then I just have one or two announcements to make before we end or at some point.
Okay, gotcha. I'm in.
Good. Okay. Do you read, did you, you met Kimberly, I think,
We did
probably.
not long ago. Nice to see you.
I'm muted. Hi, nice to see you again too. I'm so happy to have you here tonight.
Yeah, me too. Thank
Yeah, I'm excited. So, and this the session is recording already, so I don't have control over it. Must be, I totally forgot that Lynn set this up, but we do have her login information now in case we need to do anything, but I don't think we will, other than know that we, maybe, I don't know. I'll tell Amy that maybe we'll edit out the first, because I signed in at 9:45, so we'll have 15 minutes of dead boringness with me just sitting there.
Nice. Are you guys
Yeah.
all big weather?
Well, Kimberly's having big weather.
Well, we've been nice this week. Last week we had about 16 inches at my house of snow, and it's unusual. It's not melted yet. It's usually melted in a couple days, but
Are you in Denver, Kimberly?
I'm near Boulder. Yeah, I'm in between Denver and Boulder.
What's the temperature there?
Nice today. I think it's maybe 50.
Oh.
Oh, so it'll probably
Yeah, it
melt.
got up to
Sure.
50 today. Yeah, it's 45 now.
Okay, so it'll start melting probably a bit
Yeah.
and good. Yeah.
Melting.
Good, good.
How about where you are, Jan?
That's the way we are too, but we haven't had as much snow. We're not quite the ski area here. We're in a valley. And so we're in the mountains, but we're in the valley of the mountains there in central Utah. So yeah, the ski resorts are doing great, and that's good. But
I
so far, most of
bet.
our snow has melted, but it's cold. It's down to zero at night. So
Wow. Well, I'm feeling very happy to be where I am. It got up to 70 degrees today. It'll go down to 40 tonight, but I love having some nice sun for a little couple hours in the day.
well, when I slipped on
Delish.
some ice today, taking my dog to the vet, I didn't fall, but you know, good. I slipped and I thought, yeah, I would like to be in Austin with those socks and 70 degrees.
Yeah, you come anytime and visit me, girlfriend.
Indeed, I will.
Hi, Lisa. I see her name.
I know
Christina emailed me that she can't make it tonight, so we won't see her, but we should have a bunch of others. There's Jill. Hi, Jill. Nice to see you. Are you freezing cold where you are?
Oh, it's always cold here.
Yeah. How much snow do you have?
At least a foot.
Wow.
Like that. It's just Minnesota. That's the way it is.
Yep.
But the roads are good. So, you know, if the roads are good, all is well.
Good. That's good. Hey, did you and Lynn ever get together and start working on your thing?
We have not.
Oh, I want to hear. I want to hear that you have one of these days.
One of these days.
Yes.
What are you working on, Jill? I'm excited to hear this.
We were just gonna work on a class or something. So, anyway.
A class or something. Okay, so we're still waiting, Lynn, for you and Jill to be getting together on that project. So I have that it is 6 o'clock my time and time for us to get started. So I suspect a few more people will be jumping in. It's nice to see you, Lynn. We were just talking about you. And Lisa, I'm hoping you're hearing us even though we can't see you. So I want to welcome everybody, and I'm so thrilled and delighted that you are here with us, Deborah. It is always, you know, Deborah and I used to occasionally have this great fun teaching together, and we just had a blast. So I'm always very happy to see you in the room with me, and you are, those of you who haven't really met Deborah yet or heard her teach or speak, you're in for a real treat, because nobody uses language and explanations the way Deborah does. I always learn so much from you, so I'm happy that you're here. And Deborah has like 30 plus years experience teaching this work in depth psychology and energy healing and teaching. I met, the first time I heard Deborah teach was when I was a student at the Barbara Brennan School of Healing. And she got up in front of, I don't know, 500 people or however many it was and taught a class on sex. So she had all of our rapt, undivided attention. And I never forgot her from that moment going forward. So without further ado, Deborah, I'm going to just make a couple of announcements first real quick. And then I'll turn it over to you. Just a couple quick announcements. So this is our fourth session of our four sessions, and to continue to maintain your status on the Find a Practitioner page, as you know, it's required to attend, and you got this first year gratis. Next year, you'll get the course for half price if you sign up by the end of the year. And so the course is only $395, so half price is gonna be like $200. So that is available to you, and I want to really encourage you all to please take care of yourselves and do that. And that continuing education is so important for us to continue to keep applying these techniques to what we're doing in our practice, to keep learning and applying them. And this is a wonderful forum, as you know, to be able to do that. So I'm going to turn it over to Deborah. And also there'll be time, I'm sure, Deborah, you'll keep some time for Q&A, and maybe if there are any cases or case questions that you want to bring to her too, this is a great opportunity for that as well. So it's all yours, Deborah.
Hi. You know, and what I really want to do tonight, and you know, it's, I know Lisa pretty well. And one of the things that I know really well is that you can look all this stuff up. So what I really want to do is talk to you about what scares you and what you're thinking might show up or has shown up in your practice that feels like an edge. Because the things I listed on the write-up that Laura and I sent are things that really surprised me. I had to go back and do psychology training after energy work training because I hadn't realized that when people relax, they begin to regress. And so whatever was coming up from their bodies, which I thought I was just kind of doing body-centered therapy and a little character structures, turned out to often include some of the things on that list that really have surprised me. And I guess probably the smartest decision I ever made clinically is I have a clinical supervisor. And I've seen her for 30 years, which is a huge amount of money. But it really is a way to support you guys to take classes like what Laura's doing, because it you'll never know when it's going to hit you. That's something that you didn't expect. And I have, you know, a whole list here of stories. But what I really want to do is talk about how your practices are going and you put into the middle what it is that you're most interested in or curious about the subject, which is kind of the more difficult psychological issues that might show up.
Great.
I'll jump in. So, Deborah, right when you said what scares you the most, and I have, what scares me the most is when I get scared of clients. So I have two clients that I'm scared. I'm scared of them. I'm scared of their energy. And I think what comes up for me, what I've noticed is there may be like some hints of some personality disorder. So there's this like a twist. Like they're like blaming or they're looking for a way in to me to get to me. And then I have to first recognize it and then sit with it and allow that to go. And then that part of that young part of them that didn't get met. So I would love to hear about how you handle if you ever have clients that you get scared of.
Yeah. That's really helpful. Okay, I got that. We'll come back to it. Let's see if we can get a bunch of them in, and then we can design the session around what you guys really want to talk about. I can lecture too, but it's not as much.
So I guess for me, boundaries is a really big thing. I feels like I'm coming off drugs or something, but maybe it is. I'm coming off a long, like lifelong history of no boundaries and really working to exercise and understand what boundaries are for me. And so not only am I training myself, I'm training my clients to understand this new concept that with me of boundaries. And so it means, no, I'm not going to answer your texts at all times of the day at the drop of a hat, or your emails, or. And kind of piggybacking on what Lisa says, in some respects, that scares me.
So that's really helpful, Lynn. Got you. That's great. We can do these. Good. Anything else that's really up? I mean, other things may come up as we continue to talk. Yeah, Jan.
Just quickly, the non-communicative client that mm-hmm. I feel like I'm sort of pulling teeth to get them, and I don't want to be leading them. I want to give them space and time, but sometimes no matter what I seem to sort of try, they'll just sit there. And it's almost like a passive aggressive thing, and almost kind of what Lisa was bringing. I kind of wonder if there's, and then I think, is that just me being triggered, or are they really trying to trigger me? Or is it a little bit of both? So that's my question.
Good. Really helpful. Good. Okay. Anything else? Hi, Tina. Well, should we start on these and see how they unroll for you? Okay, so let's start with, it's interesting to me that underneath all of these is something that I think it took me about 20 years to understand about my practice. And Laura, anytime you want to jump in. Because what depth psychology offers to independent practitioners, I think, is the understanding that most of the time your client is trying to make you feel the way they feel. They want to create a countertransference in you that will let them know that you got how badly they feel. And so the healing is the you, the me, and the we. So in the we, they're going to be creating some kind of something so that you can understand what's happening to them. And with that, for me, with that framework, it has helped me be more about the client and less about me. So that was my first really helpful one. The other one that comes with all of these is the same thing, but it sounds a little different with boundaries and with uncommunicative clients as well, is what you're doing is for them. So when we create boundaries, it's not because we need boundaries, it's because they need boundaries. For any of you who've raised children know this, it's a very complicated negotiation to understand that if you actually hurt your children if you don't have boundaries, right? So it's the same thing with your client, is it actually hurts them. And it recreates, back to point one, it recreates something in the transference between the two of you that's toxic to them. They are coming to you to try to get something new to happen. So I want to just shove right back on the thing that I understand best about clinical work, which is from a really wonderful book called A General Theory of Love. And I've been teaching this book for years. And the thing that I always come back to with this stuff is that what's happening between me and the client is me as the person who has to regulate at the deepest level in the room. It's not my problems that are being regulated. It's theirs. But they're going to, you know, like Lisa's having happen, and I'm really glad you brought that up. Her own issues are starting to bounce, right? So as the one who's regulating, then the client is going to be resonating to your regulation. And in that regulation, and this is the coolest thing that happens in therapy, is the brain makes a new choice. And they actually, there's a lot of science on this, right? So the brain makes a new choice. So if you're dysregulated with a client, then they're not going to be able to connect and do the work. So let's start with Lisa. Lisa, where's the catch for you? Like, what is the, do you have an example of where is it that someone's coming to get you so that they can say, gotcha? Do you have an example? I mean, I can do some, but let's see if yours is right on top.
The two clients that I'm thinking of. One client, she's very intellectual. So she's also a therapist in training. So she comes in with, you know, all of these theories, and she's naming this, naming that. Like, I can really care less about it. And that's not how I work. Like, I'm come more from here. And so that part of me is like, I want to match her And... And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to match her or want to match her. And so that's one example. And the other one is the other client is, she blames. So she's blaming everybody else around her. And then she feels alone.
Okay. And it hasn't aimed at you yet.
No.
But the fear is that it will.
Yeah, there's something about her. I mean, I'm getting some like counter transference with her. She hasn't directed at me yet.
So one of the things we could look at energetically with that is the possibility that she's going to push on you until you leave. Until you become a bad one. So the trick for me, and this is the hard work, and it sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, is that you have to get your client out of the object relationship, right? Mm-hmm. So right now, Lisa's describing her client as an object, is seeing her as an object. and as everyone else is also an object. Are you guys pretty steeped in object relations? I don't want to talk about stuff you don't know about.
They're not, but if anybody has a question as Deborah's going, please jump in.
Okay, so basically it's so simple, and it's exactly what you think it is. You know, women know it right away because women have the objectification of the female body, right? So the same thing's happening with clients who are having mental health issues is that you're not actually a person. You're either a supply for a narcissist, you know, you're bringing them attention, which they desperately need, or you're an object that they're going to keep pushing on until they get a reaction so that somebody will know how much they hurt. Mm. Okay, so if you're not an object, then that really guides your therapy because, Lisa, one thing that can, you know, you're going to have to listen for a long time usually because if people are very heady or aren't speaking at all, they need something over time, right? Because it's too scary to drop into body-centered therapy. But somehow she arrived with you and you advertise yourself as a body-centered therapist, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this energy, you actually have to match this while holding this, right? Mm-hmm. And then as you drop in, and my experience with this is that I can only sometimes drop in a few sentences a session for a while until real safety. It's like, how did that feel, Jenny? Or where did you notice that in your body? I don't want to talk about that.
So that's exactly what happens. I have like maybe like two sentences in the whole session, and then she pops in and out.
Yeah.
Right? She'll come in and then she'll cry, and then it's like boom, like the light switch went on, she pops out and it's gone.
Has she let you at this point step in right there and say what just happened?
Yes. And it's very short. It's, she'll name it and then go. Yeah. I'm gone.
Good. Yeah. So what Lisa's talking about, we're going to call, and this is when you start Googling stuff. This is trauma, right? Trauma-informed therapy, right? Something's happening that we have to trust in her as her regulator that she can't drop down. If she would, she could. And she wouldn't need therapy, right? Her character structure, her wound, what she's working on is so dangerous that the only thing that's saving her life is the intellectual story. So I think your job continues to be to stay with the we. And you can even do some stuff like at the end of the session is say, Jenny, how did it feel to talk for an hour without stopping?
Yeah.
You know, what was that like for you? Or even after half an hour, Jenny, are we right on track for you? You know, you've really been laying a lot of intellectual stuff, and I'm happy with that, but I want to know how that is for you. Does it give you anything you need? And what is that? Does that sound right, Lisa?
Yeah. And this week, it was interesting because she went into, we started talking about her like 4-year-old child, her inner child, and she's like, I just want to lay down on the couch. So she laid down on the couch and she was crying. And I just asked, like, would you like me to come closer? She's like, nope, don't come closer. So I said, okay.
God, you're doing great.
I agree. So what can I just jump in for one second? Yeah. I love what you said, Deborah, and especially about the reflecting back, the wins that she had, like just naming it. Wow, how was it to talk for 30 minutes without stopping? You know, how was that for you to kind of, and I noticed you cried for a couple moments there. What was that like? To just validate the first of all, what's authentically present, but also that in itself is a triumph and an accomplishment for her. So I think that was great, great points.
That's beautiful. Both saying the same in different words. Can you hear it? Is that we're talking about the we. We're actually talking about my relationship with Jenny. Lisa's relationship with Jenny. That's what therapy is actually all about. It's surprisingly not so much about what's happening in the rest of their lives, which is really shocking to me. I mean, honestly, this is not stuff I knew when I started doing talk therapy with people. It was like, whoa.
Can I ask one more thing about it? So yeah. Maybe this is, I don't know if this is a hook, but then after that, she's like, she goes in like, I don't want to stay there. She's like, I'm trying to integrate my adult self with my child self, and I don't want to stay there. And I don't know if she's using that for like an excuse, or I mean, I feel like you need like maybe hang out there and see what comes up, and that's how it moves. But maybe I'm wrong on that.
So I'll just tell you what it's like for me, Lisa. I have PTSD, and if you kept making me go when I didn't want to go, I would not come back.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It really, you have to respect that whatever that defense is, it actually still makes me emotional, whatever that defense is built for life-saving reasons. It's not nothing. Okay. Yeah. So once again, just keep turning back to the we, and what, how can you meet her somewhere where she's hanging out in your office, not about the story outside your office. And if you can do a few of those per session, then you start to create. I mean, I have my famous 15-year client, and we're just doing this now.
Wow.
So we've been together a really long time, and it's actually incredibly painful for her that it took so long, but it did. So, I want to talk about just one more part about this for all of you about being scared of your client. So if any of you have ever read Gavin De Becker's book, The Gift of Fear, it's a great book. And the thing that I've learned the hard way is that your fear has roots. And so your job as clinicians is to know what your fear is. And get help if you can't find it. Get some supervision so that you know what you're outpicturing. So then that way, if it's really yours, then you gotta deal with it before you see that client again. But if they're really scary, the fear may be trying to tell you something that you need to know, especially women working alone. So I think I've been in practice 35 years, and I've had twice where I've had to ask people to leave. That's not much. They were both men. But my fear actually turned out to be correct. So on the whole continuum, what is my fear from my wound? What is the fear in the we, which is how am I going to be intimate? And what is the fear that maybe actually something damaged is too damaged for you to handle? Which is one of the things Laura asked us to talk about, which is how do you know when it's outside your scope of practice? And I think fear is a really good place to look as one of your markers. Why am I afraid? Is it for good reasons? Or is the we not organized between us yet? Or is this my crap? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Is this helpful?
Yeah.
Okay. Good job, Lisa.
Thank you, Deborah.
We'll keep circling around because these, and then we're going to, okay, so let's look at boundaries. So what do you imagine that your client is needing when they want to text you outside the session and write you long emails and think that you're going to read them and it's going to help them? What do they need?
It's more the response time. Like, I'm at their beck and call. So what is it that they need? My guess is that they need to be seen and validated, that they are there to be heard. And I know when we have actual calls and sessions, they come away saying how much it's really helped. And it's not that they shouldn't be able to email me or text me. And I'm not saying even they are the ones who are expecting me to respond right away. It's kind of a trained response that I feel that I should be doing that.
Excellent. Good, good, good. Okay, so Lynn, let's look at just for a minute, really simple stuff. So do you have, when clients do their first session, do you have a little two or three sentences you do about contact between sessions?
No.
So you might want to develop that, and your classmates, I'm sure a lot of them have that, and they could help you with that, because then it's sort of out there.
Yeah.
And I know that the clinical most common is within 48 hours. But if you can't promise that, just say as soon as I can.
Okay.
And the other thing that people tend to say pretty religiously is, I'm really happy you're writing. I've got it. I may only be able to write back to you. I got it. I'm sitting with it. And then we'll have to do the talking in session. So it really depends on where the client is developmentally and how much time and effort you're willing to do without feel. And, you know, I have clients too. I have a client right now who's overseas and he's writing me a lot. And he said, I'd like to pay you for a session for all the emails you're reading and responding to. And I thought that was really fair. So that'll just stop that. But once again, it's for him, not for me.
Right.
Because he needs to know that this therapeutic container that he pays for is available for him.
Yeah.
Not that he's my best friend. And that's the boundary problem. He is not my best friend. And the real hardest part is a lot of these people you'd love to be friends with. Does anybody have that problem? I do. But you don't get to be my friend. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once again, it's in the we. It's what do you need to create the best relationship with your client, make them feel safe and not hurt yourself. And then your side of that is, what is your character structure or what is happening in you that is anxious about not getting back to people right away? What is your core?
Well, so there's the merging.
Yeah.
That's happening. And I'm also an endurer. So it's like, all right, just bring it on. I'll take it on. Yeah. I'll put the shoulders to the wheel type thing. We'll keep it going. And it was doing all these classes that had me realize that and being aware of it. And to go along with that, part of the reason I have that is because I want to help people. So it helps me to understand that I help them best by creating that container. And you mentioned earlier in the call too, how this is best for them because they may be responding to the lack of boundaries. You know, I have 7 children. They had boundaries. So I understand that. I just hadn't transferred that over to this type of thing. So this has been really helpful for me to get more clarity and understand how that can be really helpful to them. And what you just said about with this man, it gave me an idea that I wrote down that, and maybe this isn't right, but I'll just offer it. I will answer so many emails or something like that. And if you want more than that, here's an additional cost. Something, because it's giving, like you said, that placement, because otherwise they don't know. They're going to keep writing because I answer. And they don't understand.
And then it's really important that you get that out right in the front, because if you have it and you impose it mid-therapy, you could very easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. All right. So that's great. That's great. And the last one for all of us, and this is about countertransference, which is always the hardest part on clients that have kind of difficult personality stuff, is like, how does it hit me? So just imagine for a minute, how would you, if you, me, the client, this is really fun. How would you feel if you thought your therapist was merging with you or enduring you? Right? I would hate it. I would be so, so sad. So that's really the responsibility too, not to do that or to learn about it, so that you don't, you actually want to come from what Laura is so good at, is from this authentic, you know, really curious, interested, loving heart. And then everything good happens, or everything good can happen, because it's not in your defense. So that's the work on the therapist side. We all have to do it, believe me. Good job. All right, so let's talk a little bit about clients that don't talk. How many of the rest of you have had that? So what do you make of that? Why do you think, what's the counter transference and the transference? So what's the transference? What are they trying to create with you? What's the we by coming into your office and not talking? And I want you to take a hit at it first.
Okay. Well, I'm just learning so much, actually, having listened to you talking with Lisa and Lynn about, you know, their need to, A, have some clarity and some boundaries in the session. And so it just made me wonder if it might be nice to begin the session when I have a client, some of these clients that don't talk when they come again, to just say, how was that for you to just sit with these feelings at the end of the session? Or even invite them at first and say, you know, I'm here for you, and your body is the one that's going to be doing the talking, and we're going to be helping together you tap into some solutions and some ideas, and that may take time, and I'm willing to take that time, and we can sit in silence if that need, you know, need happen. And otherwise, I'm here for you, and if you want to bring things up, you know, that's good. or I shouldn't say good, because that's like judgmental, but I'm here for whatever you need, basically.
Okay, so that's an excellent base note. So that's really going to work. The second part of that that might not work, and this is where abnormal or more difficult client stuff happens, is you may have just walked into a trap.
The I'm here for whatever you need bit. Yeah. I wondered, after that came out of my mouth, I thought, okay, I'm really not here, because there's that boundaries thing again. And also, if we're going to help them, if they knew what they needed, they wouldn't be coming to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm here to help them heal.
I'm going to keep turning this around for all of you. You're actually not here to help them.
I'm here to help them help themselves.
You're just here.
Okay.
I mean, I'm serious. There's a lot of great writing on how do we actually help. And help, the problem with the word helping is that it assumes that you know something that they don't. So another way to, this isn't wrong or right, it's just kind of a growing of the internal environment to create great therapy for you, is how are they helping me? What are we doing together? What is curious and interesting about this is really a different set of questions than how can I help them? Can you feel the difference?
I do have a question about that, Deborah, though, because if I'm paying somebody, I'm paying them because I they may have something I don't have, and I want that piece of the puzzle. And
I
feel like they may be coming to me that same way. Otherwise, why would they pay? If I were just there, why would they be paying me?
Okay, so here's the interesting thing for you guys, because you guys are all doing this as part of a nutrition program, right? So a lot of your clients, is that right? A lot of your clients are coming to nutritional counseling? Okay, so in that case, then we're going to look at therapist, coach, and teacher, right? And they all exist in the room, and they're all fine. So let me back off on my who's helping. And come back to, you know, there is information that you have that they need, and that is correct. I just want to really keep underscoring that if you get caught in a, I'm helping them, you may lose some of your curiosity.
Yeah. Or it may be intimidating if we feel like we're not coming up with the sage answer that we think
could be. Yeah.
Okay. You know, though, It fits in really well still, because even though we might have knowledge that they don't, we're still giving them that opportunity to go within and claim their own healing. I have one guy that I'm working with. He was like, oh, I don't know. I've been to people for 20 years and I don't think anybody can, I mean, he was going la, 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 la. And I said, so why are you here? And I mean, he you could see the physical thing. And so while we might have knowledge, the things that we're learning here are actually what brings them to where they need to be, where they realize they are their own healer.
Yeah.
So, good. Yeah.
I'm just going to keep repeating, and you live with it how you want. It may not be true for you, which is always important to name. But the possibility is that what we're creating is a we, and that the healing happens in the we. So that's not me helping them in just in this little moment I'm talking about, this kind of depth psychology, what does therapy actually do for people? But it's a, my teacher calls it a vesica. You know, it's a container between the two of us, and into that container, the holy can arise. Into that container, the mystery will take care of the problem in a way that I can't even begin to think I can do it. So if I have some of that in the back of my head that I'm heading for the we, and I'm really curious about it, it will help me begin to differentiate between when I'm a coach, a teacher, and a therapist.
Can I ask a question here of you, Jan? What comes up for you when there's that silence? What's that like for you?
It's not as much anymore as I'm learning, but at first, of course, it was uncomfortable because I felt like nothing, you know, nothing was happening, especially if they would just really sit for a long time. Or I would reflect back to them and they would just go, you know, so that was uncomfortable. It's not so much now, but I still do wonder, you know, how that was. So I really like what you mentioned and what Deborah mentioned about how was that for you to sit and reflect most of this time. I noticed that you didn't talk very much. And how
That's
was
a great
that?
Question. What's going on? Is there any word? Do you have any words for that?
Yeah.
The other thing that it helps you if you're curious about it and you're doing great is to use it as the pointing out instructions for you. It's like, I remember one client, I think you guys, some of you have heard this before, but I had a client that didn't talk. Everything was always fine. And his wife had sent him. Yeah. And basically what we finally figured out together is that he couldn't even do hot and cold. So I would ask, are you hot? Are you cold? What do you feel on your skin? Can you feel, you know, and he was actually unable. And so what we ended up doing was having him draw. And he was willing to go home and draw. And then our therapy really took off because he was willing to.
Drawing on paper?
Yeah, he drew on paper and he drew like a little 6-year-old. And it was very deep. It was very moving to me. Now that doesn't always work either, but there's lots of, then you start Googling art therapy techniques for people who don't talk. You know, there's lots of stuff to help them come in through a different door.
Yeah, I like that because I do think that a lot of people have some really deep feelings that they're just not able to verbalize.
Yeah.
And being a very verbal person myself, I have to really make sure I'm not trying to feed them language.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were there or not. I can't remember, but one time we had an exercise where we made like sock puppets, right, for the higher self and the lower self. Mm-hmm. And those are times when I would do exactly what Deborah's talking about. I would bring out sock puppets or I would bring out the whiteboard and you know, say, hey, just scribble what you're feeling inside, close your eyes, you know, to get them where they don't have to be verbal. So yeah, that might also be helpful.
I like that.
Or just doing some movement with them, together with them.
And remember that some people who are really stuck, movement might be this.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just go back to all three of the things that you guys brought.
Can we just fill Tina in? Because she missed your instruction, your initial instruction. Some other people might be ready to toss some things in the pot too.
What are the things that have come up in your practice or that you're afraid of might come in your practice that you feel that you might have serious countertransference with, be afraid of, or not know what to do? So I'm going to tell you a couple of mine, and then you could, or should I shut up and let you people throw stuff in?
I'd love to hear some of yours, Steph.
Me too.
And this one applies to you guys a lot because you guys are going to be working with eating disorders, I think, a lot if you're doing nutrition stuff. Is that coming up a lot? Okay. So I'm an addict in recovery, and I've had an eating disorder, and I was, I'm a victim of sexual violence. I have a very traumatized past, and I'm good now. You know, I've done a lot of work. But the thing that interested me about the kind of help I got around food, and this is where the we really made a difference, is somebody who was really curious for me about what was happening with food, didn't have something to teach me. For a long time, I needed somebody to be more interested in my addiction, my process of despair, than I did in them teaching me anything. And so that's applied in my practice as well. I've seen that to be very useful, is holding off the teaching until the curiosity is really active between us.
Would you just, that was so important what you just said. So I want to ask if you would just repeat it one more time, because it was so important.
So it was important to me, and it remains important in my practice, that my healer is so curious about my disorders. She personally never calls anything a disorder. She's just not even interested in that. But that's helpful to me. But, you know, a lot of people walk in here and say, I am bipolar, or I have borderline personality. You know, they come in with their diagnoses that somebody has given them. So then you got to work with that. But for me, the thing that has helped my addictive process the most is this just deep curiosity about why, what is that solving for me? And that worldview that you guys are learning from Laura, I know, is the worldview that says, whatever I'm doing here, I'm trying to save my life. I'm not actually trying to hurt myself. I am trying to handle something in the unnameable. And if you could sit with me in that, I would start to trust you, and then that we would live up, start to be alive. And then my shame part, my shame core would start to release, because you're actually just interested. Like, wow, yeah, you had the eating plan and you didn't do any of it. That's so interesting. Well, just tell me about one of the times. What was that like? And let's put shame on the table. Was there shame there? I don't know. Now, in my case, I get to join people, which is also a therapeutic technique, and you have to be fairly careful with it. But I can say, look, I've had this too. And boy, every time I decide to use that, the we gets really rich. So you have to decide how much disclosing is healthy for your client and for you and for your boundaries and all of that. But there are some of those things that become the we. So I'm just going to keep saying the same stuff all night. It's that we that gets really, really rich. And someone who's been labeled in a disorder, last thing they need is anybody else thinking of them as fucked up. They really, really need you to be curious about what's happening and see if you can start to find language on it and talk about, you know, forces to feelings to words. What are the forces? Like, what is that? I mean, I don't know if any, do any, have any, or I don't know, you don't have to admit it, but in my addictive process, and I'm all the way through most of it, I'm occasionally on shopping, and I'll tell you the last one I'm working on. With shopping, this just happened to me today, I'm remodeling some stuff in my house, and I got two packages I could not remember shopping for. Isn't that interesting? Where do you think I went? Right? What's the territory for an addict? And the bottom territory, one of our teachers, and I really love this, she said that addiction is actually an unconscious longing for bliss. I'm trying to feel better. And then if I can start looking with my helper at what's happening in the stress field that has triggered my old comfort method. So for me, it's no longer sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's occasional Amazon fuck ups, you know, which is great. But for a long time, it wasn't that. So that is the part about all of these disorders that come into your room that I want to just leave you with as we get through this tonight, is that curiosity and love and compassion is much stronger than the diagnosis. And the diagnosis, you can go read. I mean, before we got on tonight, I went up and brushed up on borderline and you know, anorexia and bulimia, which I'm really interested in, and overeating and dysmorphia. And I don't know, any of you have dysmorphia or willing to say that you do? Yeah, I do too. Yeah. So you guys all know what dysmorphia is? Okay, body dysmorphia is the new name for all the things that we call eating disorders. And basically what it means is that you're not seeing, usually not seeing your body the way it actually is. So especially for anorexia and bulimia, it's so, I look in the, well, I'll tell you mine. I mean, I'm just going to do the personal ones because they're the most effective. Is I used to see, in when I was in high school, I would look in the mirror and I would see the face of a pig. And if you can see me, I have kind of a blunt nose and I would do this. And I'm really not crazy. This is kind of normal stuff for people with eating disorders who have a background like mine, right? It's like something's happening in the way that I'm putting things together that is distorting my ability to love myself. And the reasons for it are huge. And once again, that takes you back to Google. It's like, what would Deborah be needing in high school? Where did she go that this cute, actually fairly thin little girl, because that's a little girl, you know, I was 13. Where did she go? What was happening? And believe me, there's a story. So I'm expecting that for your kids, there's a story too. And for your clients, there's a story. And you, they may have been waiting, just waiting to find you to tell that story and have it be safely held. And it won't come out unless you're curious about it without judgment or shame.
I just want to add one more thing to that pot. I just so love what you just said about that. That curiosity, compassion, and love are much stronger than the diagnosis and much more effective and much more potent than that. And I would just add that it also is a holding of the truth that they have the capacity within themselves to find that place of healing for themselves, that we can sit there, and what are we loving in them? We're loving the fact that we're actually visibly holding their incredible resilience, their incredible capacity, for their own healing, their beauty, their wonderment, right? That we're sitting with that as part of the mix for that.
Yeah. And then, anyway, once again, Googling is really helpful, and so is studying psychology. I mean, there's lots and lots of information on what these actual disorders are. A really common thing that happens in Santa Cruz, I don't know what'll happen for you, is that my clients will come in either drunk or stoned.
Wow.
So you have to decide, maybe, you know, where you guys are living, that's not a big issue. Eventually someone will come in drunk or on Oxy, Midwesterners, you know, it's here. And so you have to decide inside yourself, what is that dilemma for me? And what is my countertransference with it? And what do I believe about that? There's a lot of therapists who do not believe you should work with people who are using because they're just wasting their money. And then there's a whole nother group of therapists that believes that creating a strong we is the best shot that person has at healing. You're going to have to decide what's true for you. I've had 3 or 4 people do come in, and I've decided that it's not useful for me. And I was one of the ones who thought I could work with anybody, but I can't. It honestly just makes me too sad. And I can't find the we because it's all stony, you know? So basically when I see that people are high when they're in my office, I just say, let's not do this. And often I don't charge them. That's the way I handle it for myself. I mean, I'm sure my therapist, you know, my supervisor would say, Deborah, charge them. You just work with them. But I just think, just go away. That's the way I make myself feel better about it. It's like, I just can't. It's not, and that's from my own background. So that's my counter transference. And also my belief that I've learned to believe, I didn't at the beginning, but I've learned to believe that therapy while you're high is not that useful. Unless you're really, really good at it. And then go for it. You need it. We need you.
Can I ask a question about that?
Sure.
And part of it, because I have a son that is in that space right now. And And so I actually won't talk to him when he's like that most of the time because he doesn't even remember. So, but on the more professional side, if it happens continually, what would you do?
Well, I think that's when boundary setting gets really helpful. And let's say you're on the second time or the third time and you've said, look, I tried this a few times and I'm actually not comfortable. And I think you're wasting your money. And, here's the one that really helps. I'm going to call you an Uber. Because then that says to them, I take this seriously and I'm not letting you out of here. I'm not just sending you back into the world as though this was nothing. And you can come get your car tomorrow. And then let's just, I'm okay. You know, you do what you do you and I really care about you. And if you want to come back to sessions, then come sober and do what you want on either side of that. But I've actually done the Uber thing.
Do you pay for the Uber or do you just call it and let them pay?
Now that's me, and it's probably not as wise as me. But when somebody's really drunk, you just have to get them gone. So one time I recollected, and one time they didn't come back. So, but once again, there are great people who work with people who are high, and they do really good work. So if that's you, super.
You know what I also love about what you just said is that, you know, in the paying for the Uber, that was a way you took care of yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and so sometimes it might mean breaking the rules to be able to take care of yourself or protect yourself from a potentially, you know, dangerous situation. What I mean by that is, you know, if the guy's drunk and he gets in an accident and you didn't do your part, you could be sued, you know, who knows? Yeah. So that's another self-care thing.
Thank you.
What about some of the quiet ones now who, you know, do anybody else want to chime in with a fear or an edge that you'd like to toss out to Deborah while we've got her? We've got about 20 minutes left.
Well, I feel like mine have been addressed already.
Good.
So
I'm going to just keep adding them then because we had a whole list. All right. I'll be quiet. Okay. I'll shut up because I know I haven't heard from a couple of people.
I will share mine. I just wrote down three things. Actually, two of them might be similar. Personality disorders versus somebody who thinks they have an entity or a curse. And the third thing I wrote was dealing with sexual energy when it shows up in the healing room.
Super. Okay, let's do that. Since so many of you do energy work, that's just, you're always going to find the entity and cursey stuff. So once again, we're going to talk about countertransference and the we. So everything about whether you can help that person is whether you have some connection, if it's useful to you, to be able to help them with their belief as it is. So for example, in my world, almost all of that stuff, if I just consider it as a dreamscape, I can work with it. Like I don't really care if it's true or not. And then I'm okay. Then I don't engage my own, is it real or is it Memorex? You know, I don't engage that. So that helps me. Barbara Brennan used to say, and this is probably her smartest thing ever. She said, it's not whether it's real, it's whether it's useful. So if I'm trying to create a we and my client believes they have entities, then we best explore it as entities for a while and see how the entities are serving her. And if they are really here, which they could be, I've had all those weird, you know, I went to energy work school. I was surrounded by thousands of people thinking, you know, we're Pleiadians.
Abducted, yeah. I had a client who was abducted by Martians and you know, molested by them.
Me too. I had a really long client with that.
Yeah, and was on TV about the whole thing.
So
we might have been the same client. We might have had for a while.
But if that was used, that was something that they needed, and perhaps it was real. And so, because you don't know, you have to join them where they are. So, you know, there's all this stuff coming out of physics now about stardust and stuff. You know, we could be from the Pleiades. So it's not useful to go into doubting Thomas around entities and stuff. The problem is, and you know what? I think you just have to stay with it, Tina, for long enough. Because here's a curious, this would be a fun one. This is one of Dan's, is that if you take out the entities using energy work tools and you tell them, this is what I learned in energy work school, and it may or might not work, and it works, and they're done with that problem, report back. Because then it was useful that you didn't go into debt. And maybe your, you know, scooping hand motion actually helped energy rearrange in some cosmic mysterious way that is real. And I've seen enough of it to think it might be. So once again, it's all about the we. And with my guy, I think it is a different guy because I know your guy, Laura. My guy's a different guy. My guy from outer space, who was hurt by people from outer space. He did really, really good work on his childhood trauma. And somewhere in year two or three, he began to connect that with the space aliens. But it was never not true for him. He understood that his response to the space aliens was from his childhood, but he always, and he remains very, very clear that this actually happened to him. And I'm leaving it at that. There's no reason not to. But he's still able to do the psychological work.
Tina, what's the hard part for you, like, around this client?
The hard part isn't the entity and curses, because I agree with Deborah. I tend to just meet them where they are, and who am I to say it's not happening? And I've had things happen to me, and, you know, who knows? And I work with sensitives and empaths and intuitives, so those things show up. But with this particular client that I'm always thinking, am I missing something with her? That she may have like borderline personality, like when you were talking about fear, occasionally I'll be afraid of her by the look in her eyes, or expecting me, wanting me to do something like an unconscious demand, that type of thing. And we always come back, there's always a breakthrough eventually, but that's really uncomfortable because I feel like, am I hurting her by meeting her that's a curse and an entity, or does she need some other kind of deeper help that I can't provide?
It's a really great question, Tina. And I think what you'll find is over time, if nothing's changing for her and she's still suffering the same, that probably you've missed something.
Okay.
And if it starts to change and grow and the we gets strong enough, you'll probably have your answer to that. The thing with the eyes, I think is, you know, honestly, once you've created a safe we, and see if that, you probably already do this, but it's surprising to me how often, because people want contact so much, I'll say, something weird just happened with your eyes. Did you notice it? And what does she say?
Sorry, I went there.
And were you there, honey?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And she'll tell me where she went, and she'll tell me what she saw. And usually it comes to the trust place. And then we just take time until she's able to drop in a little bit more.
I'm going to trust your fear, like we talked about at the beginning. I think it sounds to me like you've got something that's on the border there.
Uh-huh.
Do you need to be afraid of it? I don't think so, unless she's telling you stories of hurting herself or hurting other people.
No.
Yeah. So I start reading. I mean, really, that's a little tricky.
I would just add one comment. I am agreeing with everything, and it sounds like you're doing great work with her. The only thing I would add is that in my experience with borderlines, it's a very long, slow healing process. And it doesn't mean that she's not benefiting from what you're doing with her, just because you might, and it might feel like forward, back. I mean, I've been working with a borderline for 20 years. She's my longest client. And, you know, and when I think about the struggles and the challenges she's still having, even after 20 years, I have to remind myself about the incredible progress she has also made, the enormity of skills that she has learned how to develop, and I still see her fall into some of the same traps again and again and again. but she's armed and she's more able to cope. But it's a very painful diagnosis, a painful disorder that she's living with and probably, you know, possibly will live with for the rest of her life.
One of the things that helps me the most with working with people that are really hurting like that is to help them get deeper and wider and not expect it to go away. So let's talk about three that come a lot to healing rooms, anxiety and depression. You guys hitting any of that yet? Anxiety is a huge mental disturbance in the field right now. So how many of you are treating people who come in with anxiety? What do you make of that?
I hear social media.
Mm-hmm. It's really strong. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. So then helping them create a living context, right, for what's pressing in on their energy system that's creating too much vibration. One of the ways that has been the most useful to me working with anxiety is to begin to create the conditions of it feeling like a sensation. And energy work is really spectacular for that. So is creating a witnessing guided visualization, you know, helping people create a visual story inside themselves. She who watches, he who watches, you know, the part that knows that they have feelings and thoughts, but they're not those feelings and thoughts. Do you guys all know that stuff, the disidentifying stuff? So that tends to me to be the most successful thing I do with anxiety, is getting people to get deeper and wider than the anxiety, and I don't try to make it go away. And then eventually they can begin to just feel it as sensation. And if they're very blessed and there's enough else going on that's good, anxiety and excitement run very close together. So anxiety is really going to be a big part of food, huge part of food. And so when you're getting curious about how somebody eats or where they're eating, you're going to want to look for that. Is because so often food is a way to manage carbohydrates, manage anxiety better than anything ever, always. So there you go.
Can you say a little bit more about that, Deborah, how carbohydrates manage anxiety from your perspective?
I'm just going to talk about it, the emotional part. I'm not so big on the biochemistry, though I know it's true, is almost everybody that I know who has eating stuff, if they're anxious and they eat white bread or cookies or cake or sugar or not complex carbohydrates, but simple carb, you know, bad food, the immediate response is a release of the pain. And then in about, you know, somewhere between 20 minutes and 2 hours, it's all fucked again. It actually can be worse because you created the wrong biochemistry. So those folks, if you can get them into a complex carbohydrate, you're going to be really making a big step. And even, I mean, that's why, you know, what's her name? The weight lady that sells stuff to you in a plastic bag, but they have a lot of dessert. And it's just for that. It's an old thing, like Jenny Craig kind of thing. Weight Watchers. They sell all this stuff, you know, all packaged for you. So since you guys aren't particularly advocating that, but some people need it and it works well for them, but just notice that almost every meal has something sweet in it. It's all part of the same, what is my bliss? What am I trying to, how am I trying to comfort myself? What is going on that is unbearable? Which I want to throw in about the unbearable too, is also a lot of people with addictions, you have to be really gentle because they may be glued together by their addiction. It's not some fun choice they made to be tough. You know, there's something really seriously hurting. And I think that's back to what Laura said, is we can keep circling around. Why did they start doing this? What are they trying to solve inside themselves rather than what did they do wrong? So I think that anxiety is huge right now. And my experience, I have a client right now, I'll give you a good example. He has global anxiety and he's had it for about 15 years. So he's not able to work anymore. And he is the best defined guy I've ever met. He knows everything about his disease. And he can out-talk anybody on what's wrong with him and what is, and he's really good at it. And it's also kind of kept him stuck. Because if he has all these things, therefore, he deserves to be stuck, right? And it took us about 8 weeks, and we finally started talking about the secondary gain. And you can't talk about a secondary gain with somebody in the first session. That would be so cruel. Like, what are you getting out of this? What is this, you know, anxiety disorder giving you? And for him, he doesn't have to fail. He doesn't try, he doesn't fail. And then we get into the whole story of his family and his, you know, super successful family. And then everything starts making sense to him, but it came out of his own understanding of his own disorder and being taken seriously. You know, of course you can't work if you feel that way. And hopefully we're going to get to a point where he can go back to work. And it's another one of those incredible mixtures. He's having, you know, electric shock therapy. And it's helping. Who am I to say that's the wrong thing to do? He's doing great. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if just sitting with me for 10 years would be as fast as electric shock. I really don't know. So depression and anxiety are going to be very common in your world. And depression's a bear. Depression is a bear. And you just have to be so loving and sympathetic to that and help people get, I always find it helps them to get a picture of it. You know, like one of my clients, her anxiety looks like a big shark. And one of them actually did an anxiety box, and she brought in this little box that's full of all the things that make her depressed or anxious. One of them has a big cloud that arrives in the room. So out picturing it enough that we could work on it, that's been helpful for us. Anxiety, the same. Visual journeying's been helpful. Getting allies, internal allies. Once again, building enough wholeness inside, right, that people can tolerate the unbearable. I think that would be the key to difficult psychological dilemmas, is it's unbearable. And if you were handed that genetics, wow. You know, that's no shame there. You just have, this is what you have to work with. So that also, I'm sure that you've learned some of this stuff, but if you haven't, it's great to learn. If you can, do you guys do this for class? Do you do genograms?
No, we haven't done genograms.
I think it'd be really worth doing for nutrition people, because what you do is you take a family, you've got a big white piece of paper and you do a family. I'll send Laura the little template for it. And you do family and the kids, and then as many generations back as you can on both sides with parents and their children and the ones they were married to and the divorces and the deaths, as many generations as you can do on one page. And then you go back and you write in for all the people you know about, if there was any genetic disorders, alcoholism, mental illness, smokers, drinkers, you know, you just start looking at everything. And once you get it all up there, people are so kind to themselves because they see what they're carrying. Oh my God, I'm carrying that? I am carrying that. So that one helps a lot with depression too, because depression has a huge genetic component. And so does chronic pain. I'd say 80% of my chronic pain patients have a parent who's a chronic pain parent. So whether that's epigenetics, whether that's been carried on the emotions, or if that's actually a genetic physical condition, I don't think we know yet.
So we have about 10 more minutes. Hi, Mary Lynn. I'm glad to see you even for just a few minutes here. Chris or Kimberly, do you either of you want to check in on anything while we've got a few minutes left with Deborah?
No, I love that concept of drawing it all out to have the visual of the family history and the inherited pieces that might be happening. I think that would be so much more powerful than just talking about it.
It makes things go really fast.
I love that. Thank you.
Chris, anything that you're good? Okay. So we've got about 5 more minutes, Deborah. Do you want to kind of wrap us up a bit? And Mary Lynn, I'm glad to see your face, even though it's just for a few minutes here.
I'm sorry. I thought it started at 5 o'clock, or I guess I was
confused. Anyway,
okay. So. Well, you'll get the replay for sure.
Yeah. So, okay. Hi, everybody.
Okay. Hi. Good to see your face.
So the last thing I want to just drop in your bucket, because that's what the topic was for tonight, is suicide. So how many of you have ever worked yet with a suicidal client? Okay. So what happened to your body when they told you they had a plan? Yeah. Or did that? I'm assuming that you knew they were suicidal because they were talking enough about it to see that, or was it pre-planned?
I worked with a young man, and I don't work with men very much, especially younger men. And I felt really inadequate in support. I think I got through it really well, but I noticed that come up for me is, oh my gosh, can I do this? Can I handle this? And the fear of knowing men tend to be more successful with suicide attempts. They tend to actually do it more than just talk about it. So that kind of was all the intellectual stuff kind of made me a little bit nervous and scary. It was scary for me in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I'll share that I noticed that happens for me is one of my reactions when I feel like I'm in deep water or water over my head with a client is I'll have a knee-jerk, like, I want to refer them out. I just want to refer this client out. Like, all of a sudden, I'm not qualified. And it's most often one of the worst things that we can do, because that's when they need us most, when they're pushing our edge the most. And it's really, it can be very, for me, it's been at times very scary to stay in the soup with them. And when I do, and when I get supervision around it, when those things happen, which I do, which I must because I need it, then I usually have some kind of breakthrough within myself, some breakthrough of my own fears and my own limitations. So I just wanted to toss that one in the pot.
That's great. Well, just know that that's on the extreme of probably what you're going to run into. And you guys have rules for it, and I know you'll go over them if you haven't already. There are, you know, we are all now designated reporters. I believe you guys are too, right?
Well, they're not legally, but ethically we are, absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, some other time we can talk about this, but I've actually had two clients that had...
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of energy healers, but I don't know about nutritionists. Are you guys mandated reporters?
I think no. It might depend on the state, but I don't know of any state where it is required.
Okay.
Well, that's good in a way, because I know my two people that had plans, I didn't turn them in with very, very careful help from my supervisor. That was really scary for me. It's like, oh shit. But I'm with Laura on that one, is you got to wait it out enough to see if you're the person for them and you have the right kind of help, or you know, you report. It's like the law of unintended consequences becomes really active right there. And I don't have answers for any of that. I just know what it's like to sit with it. Okay, so let's just wrap it up real quick, is that everything is about the we. Everything you're creating is the possibility of change happening because they are loved. Everything else is detritus. It's just stuff. It's great stuff. It's wonderful stuff. It's educational stuff. But in my true belief, the thing that heals people is real relationships. And especially in this time of social media and overwhelm, physical, tactile, real, alive, breath to breath, we're almost desperate for it. So be part of that.
Beautiful. Deborah, thank you so, so much. It's just always inspiring and so exciting to hear you just roll it out. And Deborah's contact information is there at the top of the chat if any of you are interested in connecting with her for her work or her services or anything like that. Please feel free to reach out to her. And I would love to have you back again next year. Just a reminder, everybody, please sign up before the end of the year. So you can get the course for half price for next year. It's just so important and invaluable to your practice. And thank you all so much for being here. Thank you, Deborah, so much for being here. It's always so great. And And I will be in touch if you guys have any questions. I know, Deborah, you have to dash. I can stay on for a couple minutes more. If anybody needs to or wants to ask a question about anything, feel free, and I'll just stick with you for a few more minutes. Bye, Deb. Okay. Anything else that you guys want to touch in on?
Go ahead, Tina.
Sorry. The part I brought up about the sexual energy in the healing room, I just like a few, you taught it to me so well, Laura, because it has shown up and I remembered your exact words. It will show up. What are you going to do? But it's happened more than once, and I it's male and female. So first inclination is don't work with men. But then it's happened the other way, and I guess that I want to check in on my nurturing. How that's the thing I bring is like my medicine is nurturing, and I'm like, is that being misconstrued as something else, or like what's happening here?
Oh, well, is your nurturing, when you say your nurturing, is, are you using physical contact with them for that nurturing?
Sometimes.
Okay. And they're sexualizing that, do you think, or what's going on with it?
No, I don't believe it's because of the physical contact, because I use it very specifically. And if I'm feeling anything ahead of time, I'll feel it right away, and I won't.
I'm just going to share with you one statement that I've used frequently with clients, and sometimes more than once, is I've said to them, when, especially if I'm going to give them physical nurturing contact for whatever reason, I'll say, I just want to remind you that nothing inappropriate will ever happen here. Uh-huh. And it gives them permission to relax too, because if they're feeling turned on or if they're feeling whatever they're feeling, they often will relax around that. If it's more complex than that, then that would be maybe a longer conversation that we could have or should have at some point to again explore what's coming up for you around it. It's natural for the client at times to go through a sexual charge with their therapist. It's part of the growing up transference, especially if there was, I think there's a natural developmental stage, especially around puberty, for the child of the opposite sex parent to be, well, at least more often than not, the opposite sex parent to be attracted to their parent sexually, because that's their first relationship, how they're getting to know about their own sexuality. And if your client didn't get to have that in a healthy, safe way, then they're needing to have that with you. And so if you can hold the clarity of that and the boundary of that, they'll probably pass through that attraction stage and get to the other side of it.
This makes a lot of sense. And I have used that exact phrase of nothing inappropriate will happen. It was only one instance where I did have to ask the person to leave, because clearly they weren't actually wanting energy work.
Okay.
But I just, that helped me a lot with what you just explained.
Okay, good. And yeah, and is that an ongoing client that you asked to leave, or was that just like a one time? What, they were looking for something else?
He came twice, but clearly he was ready for something to actually happen. He wasn't receiving what I had offered. I just said, this is outside of my scope of practice. Nothing inappropriate is going to happen. I don't actually think I can help you with this. And he left, and he wasn't happy about it, but he never came back.
Perfect. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything more on that, or you feel complete with that now?
No, I feel complete. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Anybody else? What's sitting here?
This was really helpful to me. Just having that again for the curiosity and just being that we in that soup pot together and not being tied to a particular outcome. You know, that was really helpful with that definition of helping. And for me, it was really helpful. And so I really, really am grateful that we had this call tonight.
Yeah, great. She's fabulous. So yeah, good.
Yeah, she was actually, I think, yeah, she was, she taught us when we were in LA. So
yeah. Yeah. Kimberly, did you have something that you were starting to jump in on?
Oh, I like the perspective. I think it's very different wording, but very similar to what I do with the nervous system and the trauma and the polyvagal theory, and that we and the co-regulation, calling that a we. I really like that. And I loved how she named the creating that we, and in that space, it's really them feeling loved. I've been so nervous about using the term love or being more spiritually minded with a client, even though that's my essence and what I bring to the world. So to hear another therapist, a very professional woman, say that there is just love in this space was really soothing for me.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. I love her approach, her language. I feel incredibly aligned with it, which is partly why I keep wanting to bring her in and stay connected with her also. It's a real enhancement of the work that we all are doing here.
Thank you for bringing her.
Yeah, we'll have her back. Okay, so how many of you are planning to continue on with the complex cases next year and with the staying on the Find a Practitioner list? Anybody? Okay. Good, good.
I'm just trying to figure budget stuff out.
Okay. So you do have that half price special to the end of the year. Mary Lynn, you're qualified to graduate now, but you haven't sent in your stuff for the Find a Practitioner page, I don't believe. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I think I'm primarily here just to kind of check in with you all, because I'm feeling like I've been distant, because I have actually. Mm-hmm. And so I've missed that. And I don't know really quite what I'm going to be doing for a few more weeks. I'm moving next week, actually.
Wow.
Moving.
Congratulations.
I have so much to do. And so yeah, I'll be in Iowa next 4 hours from Lynn.
All right.
Sometime next week. I rent an apartment there.
Great.
In Iowa City. So I do want to continue, of course, and I want to get on the list. I just haven't felt like I could be present enough to help anybody else while I'm going through this major.
Yeah, understood. Well, you've got your plate full right now.
Very
full. And you don't have to, you know, be on the list to participate in the class next year. You can still participate. So just know that. Just register before the end of the year if you can, so that you can get the discount.
Okay. I didn't know about that. So that's good.
Yeah.
To know.
Yeah.
And then I would like to talk to you again fairly soon about where I'm at and what to do next. And all.
Sure. Call me. And yeah, anytime you have a window, you know, during this time, it's very stressful to move. So it's number three, I think, on the stress list. It comes after death, number one, and divorce, number two, and then moving. Just to give you some perspective, it's up there.
I understand why. After going.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you all so much. It's always so wonderful to see you, and stay in touch and have a wonderful holiday. And Tina, just so you know, I'm going to be teaching a little workshop in LA, in January. Just, if you're around and available, I'd love to have you come join us. So, you know, let me know if that's something that you're interested in.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Yes. You're welcome. All right, everybody, take care. Have a beautiful rest of your evening. I'll see you soon.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.